Hello and welcome again to Catholic Answers Focus. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and the topic for today's show is on the third part of The Secret of Fatima. That is, in fact, the title of an important new book examining the controversies surrounding the final part of The Secret of Fatima. The author of the book and our guest is Kevin J. Simmons. His other books include Refractions of Light, 201 Answers on Apparitions, Visions, and the Catholic Church, and Pope Leo XIII and the Prayer to St. Michael. Kevin Simmons, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Cy.
I note that on the third part of The Secret of Fatima is the exact opposite of a sensationalistic title. In fact, it seems sedate and academic. Is that on purpose, given the kind of lurid drama that sometimes surrounds this secret?
Yes, that it was deliberate. It's kind of a general title, so it's precisely not to be sensational.
And why so much sensationalism around this particular document, this particular secret, part of the secret?
Well, for many years, it was not published. Now, it was undisclosed to the public. And for about 56 years, give or take, it had been under lock and key, first in Portugal and then later at the Vatican. And countless speculations were arising about it, with little answers from the Church as to what the document actually contained or even some real allusion to it. So, of course, when things like that go on, it just kind of things spearhead. It builds up until eventually it just kind of takes on a life of its own.
And so let's maybe we should do a little history for folks who may not be fully aware of what happened at Fatima. Could you do a little brief history of what happened in 1917 and thereabouts?
Sure. In 1917, between May and October of that year, Our Lady appeared to three shepherd children in a little town, a little village called Fatima in Portugal, which is about an hour and a half, 2 hours north of Lisbon. And during the succession of these 6 months, Our Lady had communicated information to the children between like requests or just some general information. It kind of spearheads in the month of July, about halfway through the series of apparitions, where Our Lady communicated a secret to the children. And later, one of the visionaries, Lucia, she described it as having three different parts. So then it culminated, these events culminated in the apparition of October the 13th, 1917, and this great event called the Miracle of the Sun, where the sun was said to have danced in the sky. It was defying all the cosmic laws of gravity, and it was, at one point it was crashing into the earth. People thought the end of the world had come. But then it receded back into its normal position in the sky, and everything was okay again. But then what they also noticed was it was raining that day, and after the miracle was over, the sun had gone back. All the ground entirely was dry, as well as people's clothes. So it was an unexplained phenomenon.
And okay, so when we talk about the secrets, then these children that were entrusted with this. Now, I suppose we should clarify terminology. You say it's a secret in three parts. It's often referred to as the first, second, and third secret of Fatima. But to use the children's own understanding, it's one kind of longer thing with three parts to it.
Yes, and I stress that very much, even to the point of making it a little lopsided grammatically in my book, because we oftentimes speak in terms of the first secret, second secret, third secret, but it's kind of a mistake to do that, because it was one secret in three parts, and I think we need to restore that understanding of it, because if we're going to try to understand what each of the parts of the secret is about, we need to know that there's an organic unity, a harmony between all three parts, and I think that's something that's been lost over time, and my book is trying to help restore that, among other things.
So these were real – they're children. They're not – they're very, very young when this happens in 1917. As a matter of fact, Sister Lucia lives until 2005. So she has a long life ahead of her. The other two died very young and were canonized by the Church. So they are saints. So they didn't – when they were children then, write these things down.
No, they did not. They didn't even know how to read or write at the time. As a matter of fact, Our Lady had given a command to the primary seer, Lucia, to learn to read so that she could eventually communicate the message. But in the early years of Fatima, there were interviews that they had between the parish priest or other church officials that had come up to see what was going on. And those went through about 1922 to 1925, give or take. And then by that point, Sister Lucia had learned to read and write, and she started writing things down in her own words.
And so she's the one that finally wrote down the three parts of the secret?
Yes, it was.
And she did that because it was time to release them, or what was her motivation?
Her motivation was she was ordered by the local bishop of Leiria, Fatima, Bishop Don Jose Alves Correa da Silva. He wanted her to write things down, but it came about gradually. She was writing some documents called her memoirs, and as she was writing, people started realizing there's more that she's not telling us. As a matter of fact, at one point, one of the bishop's assistants, Canon, I think it was Galamba, had said that said to the bishop, she's going to spend a while in purgatory for paying for her sins for all the things that she's been keeping up from us. Of course, he meant it as a joke, of course. But
yeah.
But gradually, by 1941, 1942, the first two parts of the secret had been written down in her memoirs, between the third and the fourth memoir specifically. But the third part, she said she wasn't prepared yet to release because she felt as though that she hadn't had permission to do that. She became gravely ill, Sister Lucia, and the bishop became fearful that or concerned that she would die without having written down this that third part. So he was convinced to give her a command to do so, and that came sometime in 1943, I believe. And Sister Lucia struggled to fulfill this command because she was not sure who to obey. Our Lady had told her in 1917 not to tell anybody what the secret was, but now here was the bishop who was saying, write it down. And Sister, in her own words, in a letter that she had written, said that she was concerned because, you know, she's accustomed to the will of God being manifested in her religious superiors. So she's like, who do I obey? Eventually, this question was resolved on January 3rd, 1944, when Our Lady had appeared to her and told her that it was, in fact, Heaven's will that she write down the third part of the secret. And some recent information that perhaps we'll be able to get to today kind of offers a little bit more light as to exactly what happened at that time.
So it's 27 years, though, between the time of this revelation through apparition to her, apparition, and her writing it down.
Yes.
I was kind of delighted by this quote. I had never, ever thought about this, but you start your introduction to the book with a quote about the secret. There is nothing better to provoke curiosity and interest among persons than that which is intentionally kept hidden. The secret of Fatima has been one of the most subtle yet discreet means the maternal heart of Our Lady used to draw to herself the attention of so many men. That really is the truth with Fatima. The fact that there were secrets, and there in particular this third part of the secret, kept the interest alive throughout the whole century, the whole 20th century, about the Fatima apparitions.
Yes. This is kind of exclusive. I don't know if I've ever mentioned this anywhere else, but that quote was from a document that I had found in the archives of the Sanctuary of Fatima. They let me do some research there in September of 2016. And when I came across this quote, I said, you know, this is actually a really, really good article written by this, I think it was a gentleman over in the Philippines. And the more I thought about it, I said, you know, this kind of sets the stage of what you mentioned earlier is that and what we talked about earlier, I should say, is that there was that sensationalism that kind of kept Fatima in the public eye.
Yeah.
But also, God can use that in order to keep the attention on things that maybe we should. And so that quote from, I think it was F. Stein, was I thought kind of brought out that in a very non-sensational way, very, very sober way.
So this third secret then is written down by now Carmelite sister. She was a Carmelite at the time.
No. She was a Dorothean at the time. She later transferred about four years later to the Carmelites.
So Sister Lucia writes this down and puts it in an envelope and writes on the envelope, gives a little note on the envelope.
Yes, there were two envelopes, actually. There wasn't just the one, but they were two with bearing identical notes, yes.
And the notes say, open this in 1960?
She said, by the express order of Our Lady, this envelope is to be can only be opened. I think I can remember the Portuguese if you wanted the Portuguese, but I have the book here if I need to reference it. But it can only be opened in 1960. By the Cardinal Patriarch of Lisbon or by the Bishop of Leiria.
And so why was it not opened in 1960?
It was.
Oh, it was. Oh, I see.
Yes.
Oh, so see, I guess...
This is where some of the confusion comes in. The envelope says... I can't remember if it's a masculine or feminine... it says case opoge aberto in 1960. It can only be opened in 1960. Oh. It doesn't say published in 1960. And there's a difference between those in those words there. And so many people believe that it was going to be published, the text, in 1960.
Right.
But that's not what Our Lady had said. And we now know that because we possessed an account of that apparition from Sister Lucia, and the word is specifically opened by one of those two people mentioned. So,
okay,
she said nothing about publishing in 1960.
One of the extraordinary things about the apparitions at Fatima is that they end in October of 1917, and by 1 month later, something that even a few months earlier would have been thought impossible happened. The communists, Bolsheviks, took over the Russia, which was then to become the Soviet Union. And so much of the history of Fatima, even from that its very inception, is connected to Russia and communism. And this has an effect. By 1960, there's a Cold War on. And there's a sense of suspicion, I suppose, that maybe there's communist influence in the Vatican that won't that has created resistance to sharing what's in the third secret. So there's a story of the church and communism all tied up here. Would you like to elaborate on that a little bit for us?
Yes. In 1917, Our Lady had talked about how Russia would spread her errors if Our Lady's requests were not heeded, and among those requests were for the consecration of Russia to her Immaculate Heart and the spread and promulgation of a devotion called the Five First Saturdays, which is about reparation to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And so gradually, as the word about Fatima spread, people were living things over time. But unfortunately, when the time came for the consecration to be done, Our Lady appeared to Sister Lucia again in 1929 and said, "The time has come where God asks for the consecration." At that time, now we're in the pontificate of Pope Pius XI, and Pius XI received the request, but according to his personal secretary, Cardinal Confalonieri, I think is how you say his name, Pius XI really wasn't given much to private revelation, and so he didn't obey Our Lady's command, and so what happened was Russia's errors spread, her atheistic communism spread throughout the world, causing what Our Lady predicted, causing wars and persecutions of the church. The Holy Father would have much to suffer, and many nations would be annihilated, people would be martyred. We see that going through the 1930s, with especially the Spanish Civil War, the continued persecutions in Russia at the time under, I think that was Stalin at that point. And then in the 1940s, now you have World War II, then later you have the Korean War, and then you get to that famous decade of the 1960s. But that's where something really, really it starts to begin to morph a little bit. It's not just a war as in a physical war now. It's now a war of ideology. Mm-hmm. And I've become to appreciate this a lot more lately because back in June, I was at the Carmel of Coimbra in Portugal, where Sister Lucia lived for the last 55 plus years of her life. And the sisters received all of the unpublished as well as some of the published manuscripts from Sister Lucia. And they have a beautiful museum called the Sister Lucia Museum. And they have like displays for life, different artifacts, letters, documents, etc. Well, I discovered an unpublished letter of hers that she had written to Pope Paul VI. And I gave an interview last year for Catholic World Report, and we talked a little bit more about it. But ever since I came across this letter, it really brought out for me more of the what was going on in the 1960s. And I've been thinking and praying more about this lately, and it kind of comes across to me that the part of the errors of Russia would be that ideology that would start to hit the church. And when you look at the mm-hmm. history of the 20th century, once you get to the 1960s, you have the Second Vatican Council and this this word going out from journalists and reporters, et cetera, that the church is updating, you know, and the buzzword was aggiornamento. But John the 23rd meant that word one way. Other people didn't quite catch what he meant.
Right.
And people thought that the church was now going to be accepting things like artificial contraception, abortion, you know, name an issue, you know.
Right.
And so what eventually happened was you had the kibosh with Pope Paul VI with Humanae Vitae in 1968. And that was the explosion of all this rebellion and this hatred and all this other stuff. Sister Lucia wrote this letter to him in 1969 was the date of the letter. She wrote to encourage him amidst all of these persecutions. And she's saying how there are many faithful Christians, including those in her convent and elsewhere, who are there to support him and to pray for him. As I read her letter, I said, oh my goodness, this sounds an awful lot like the text of the third part of the secret. Now, I can't say that this is, in fact, her official interpretation of the third part of the secret, but when you look at it, it all kind of comes together and starts making sense, and it sheds some light upon the text that was later released, in fact, by the Vatican in the year 2000.
And so, maybe we can circle back to that, but what I'm curious, what in the letter did she say that made you think she was interpreting the third secret? The third part of the secret, excuse me.
She talked about how there was a diabolical disorientation that was spreading all throughout the world. Well, first, if you look at that word disorientation, it's turning something away from God. That's the only way that we can really read and understand that. That was being promoted by what she called the powers of darkness, and that the church was going through an agony in Gethsemane. Well, as I was reading this in the I can read her handwriting to some degree, and I had made notes and stuff, and when I got back to my hotel room, I was able to type things up and talk to a couple people that could kind of help me understand and walk me through things a little bit better. When looking at that imagery with what she wrote in the third part of the secret, you see the Pope going up to this cross with other people, and they're all being martyred. They're all being shot and killed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it seems to me then that we could read this as the Pope's being faithful to the deposit of faith, you know, to Jesus Christ, and amidst all the suffering, like the soldiers that were shooting at them, et cetera, and stuff like that. You know, these are the armies of evil that with their ideologies that are waging war against God and the Holy Faith. It just kind of shed like that. Those are kind of things that I saw. And as I got home, but well, first to my hotel room and then back home to, you know, here back in the States and just kind of reading more and, researching, was that this picture was just coming together. And I said, wow, this is a lot more profound than what we originally thought.
So then the secret is not revealed, and your take is I was fascinated by the fact that you'll have to help me out with the priest who wrote kind of a reflection. Donnie's is his name. Donnie,
Father Edward Donnie.
Donnie. Okay. He wrote a kind of reflection on Fatima, saying that he kind of divided Fatima into two things. There was the apparition, and then there was Sister Lucia's recollections of the apparition, and her recollections were likely not precise, and so involved maybe unintentional embellishments and all this kind of thing. And so there was a sense then that maybe if the secret, or if this third part of the secret wasn't entirely reliable, maybe we shouldn't publish it. This also was part of the motivation to not publish the secret.
That is the hypothesis.
Okay.
But first, I would just want to ask you, when you opened up this question, you mentioned something about the secret not being revealed. Could you just clarify that real quick? I'm not sure what you meant.
I don't know. I'm not sure that I spoke clearly then, because what I meant was that the in 1960 and then in following years until into this century, the secret was held by the popes, and that part of the motivation may have been this sense of unclarity on whether it was really an adequate expression of what had actually happened in 1917.
I see. Okay. Yes, the hypothesis goes that there was a Jesuit, and he was a Flemish Jesuit named Father Edward Donnie, and he was the founder of what we call the critical school of Fatima. He had seen or had read some of the writings as they were available at that time, as of 1944, 1945. And he noticed some discrepancies as well as some questionable theology that was present within the documents. And so he wrote a two-part article in a Flemish periodical called Streven. I hope I'm saying that right. My Dutch is terrible. And later it was turned into a book. And this book became this huge it sparked – I mean, scholars went just – I mean, they were having a field day responding to him.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea goes that he separated Fatima into two periods that we call what's known today as Fatima I and Fatima II. Fatima I is the old Fatima. That's the events closer to 1917, the original transcripts with the interviews with the seers, et cetera, et cetera. Later, Fatima II begins when Sister Lucia, 20 years later, begins to write down her memoirs, the ones I mentioned earlier, in which she starts to give certain details that weren't in the earlier documentation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like the historical critical methods of scripture studies that we're seeing coming into play here. I have read Father Donnie to some degree. There are three major things that he has written. I have read two of them, and I have them in complete English translation. And I think we need to give him a second view, because he's been grossly misunderstood. One of the ways that he has been misunderstood is that they say that it was because of Father Donnie that the Vatican didn't release the third part of the secret in the year 1960. I don't think that that's true. I have evidence that questions that. I think what happened was there was no – when you read Sister Lucia's text, the text of the vision, it's descriptive. It's not explanatory. Mm-hmm. So she writes about, here's what I saw. She doesn't write, and here's what these images mean.
Yes.
And we now know why. Because in 1944, Our Lady had said to her, that it be at peace. You know, it is God wanted to try your faith, humility, and obedience. And that's why she struggled to write things down. She said, be at peace, write what they command you, but not what that which is given you to understand of its meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the text was descriptive and not explanatory. It all makes perfect sense when you read it in light of this new information that we have now. And so when John the 23rd then reads this text, calls in the aiutante from the Secretary of State, Monsignor Paolo Tavares. He translates, but again, it's descriptive. It's not explanatory. So they didn't know what to make heads tails of this.
Mm-hmm.
So the Vatican responded to be better. And I think that's the reason why. Cardinal Ratzinger himself indicated this in the year 2000 even. He said we didn't know what it means, he was arguing. So we had to wait for time and history to pass mm-hmm. and some concrete things, historical events to happen that we can point to and say, this is probably what this means. And that's what we have now.
Well, in the English-speaking world, a great deal of the reception of all of this is influenced by Father Gruner. And you talk about him in the book. And maybe could you say a little bit about his role of popularizing certain ideas about Fatima? And he really was a kind of speaking into an empty space there, because the secret wasn't being revealed. But what was Father Gruner's kind of role in the expectations that were built up about the third secret?
The life and person of Father Nicholas Gruner, regretfully, is marred with a lot of controversy. Contrary to how it has been perceived, I think, by some people, I'm actually somewhat rather sympathetic towards Father Gruner, because when you read his material, you see somebody who's just concerned for the state of the church and is trying intimately to understand why things are happening the way that they are happening. And what I have done in my book is say, okay, let's try to separate fact from fiction. Let's try to separate the good from the bad and see where things are good, like good or bad, and separate what was wrong from what is right. A good portion of the things that Gruner wrote about are in fact accurate, but unfortunately, he took things a little too far. I recently gave an interview where I kind of gave an example. I gave an example of that. It's one thing to say that we didn't get the whole thing about Fatima mm-hmm. with respect to the third part of the secret. But it's another to turn around and say, okay, the Vatican is deliberately covering it up, and then to go around and accusing John Paul II and other curial officials of deliberately in the public. So we now know that, yes, there was more to the third part of the secret. We know this because of this new information that has come to light since 2013 that I mentioned earlier with this new document from Sister Lucia. But the Vatican's not covering up a second text. It never existed. Our Lady said, don't write it down. So the Vatican can't cover up a text that never existed.
Yeah.
But again, it's just people trying to make sense of things going on in the church. And I can't say that I blame them for that.
So I did want to ask you then, one of the things that Father Gruner did not have at his disposal, and because nobody had it at his – well, two of the things were. One, the secret itself, which was published in 2000 and – no, in the year 2000.
Yes.
And then also a later work called A Pathway Under the Graze of Mary, which is a biography written by her Carmelite sisters of Sister Lucia.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I came prepared today. I own both the Portuguese as well as the English, and I always try to refer to the Portuguese in my work. So here's a copy of it here.
And so the revelation of the sharing of the secret, Pope John Paul famously was shot on the day that on May 13th. That's would be the first of the apparitions at Fatima was on May 13th. He attributed his survival to the protection of Our Lady, later visited Fatima, put the remains of the bullet in her crown there at Fatima, and then decided when he was there the beatification of the two young seers who had died, that mm-hmm. – or he didn't decide there, but he expressed, we're going to release the secret, and then they did in June of 2016 with extended commentary from Cardinal Ratzinger and the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. What happened then? What was the reception? I mean, all these expectations had been built up for the secret your impressions of what the reception was like.
Well, the impressions was mixed. You had your people that accepted it, those that questioned it, and then those that just didn't care. Yeah. So it's like maybe like 10, 80, you know, 10 cared, 10 didn't, I mean, 10 cared or received it well. Some didn't, other 10% didn't receive it too well. And the other 80%, they were just like, whatever. But the reception has been extremely overall not very well understood. And that was one of the things that I'm trying to do with my book on the third part of The Secret of Fatima, is bring some attention to that. So, for instance, there was a during the press conference wherein they released the Holy See released the third part of The Secret, there was a questions and answers session that lasted maybe about 45 minutes or so to an hour. And we've never received a transcript of that. The Vatican never released one. Matter of fact, I was talking to the Portuguese journalist Aura Miguel back in September of 2016, and she said, yeah, I had hoped that the Vatican was going to have one, but they never did. And I said, well, my book is going to have it when it comes out. So she was ecstatic for that. Well, now that we actually have the transcript, people can go back and look at what was said by Cardinal Bertone, Cardinal Ratzinger, later Pope Benedict XVI, of course, and as well as the journalists. And we now can see much more clearly what the Vatican said, as opposed to how a lot of the journalists wrote about it. So one of the things that the journalists hyped up was the fact of a bishop being dressed in white being shot. Well, that tended to be the central image that people had of this vision, but there was other things that accompanied it. And now that we have this information in my book, it makes it a lot easier for us to understand what the Vatican did and did not say. So, for instance, the Vatican did not say that the 1981 assassination attempt was the fulfillment of the vision of the third part of The Secret. It said it is the culmination, culminato in Italian. Well, in English, those words are kind of similar. Maybe they are as well in Italian. But when you actually look it up, it says that there's a longer process mm-hmm. behind it, and maybe even afterwards. But this is just kind of like the linchpin image that we find. So when you read the rest of the transcript, they say that there's a whole history of the 20th century that gets compacted into this vision.
Yeah.
So when you actually go back and read what they said, or listen if you have the audio or video file, it a whole different picture starts to come out. And my book is kind of fighting and struggling to say, no, we need to rethink this. Because
yeah.
we didn't get the whole story back then.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
And which fueled this idea that, well, there must be some written document that they've not released, because this can't be the whole story. It added fuel to that fire. Probably the great resource that was at your disposal for in the writing of this book, you referred to a great deal, A Pathway Under the Gaze of Mary. How does that help us to understand who Sister Lucia is and what this third part of The Secret is all about?
The book is written from the perspective of those who knew her and lived with her for so many years. So there's that intimate, direct eye contact, daily life experience that's there. And they loved her very, very much. They loved her very, very much. And they know who she is as a person. And so they communicate that in this beautiful biography. So they introduce us to her soul. And that was something that Sister Lucia guarded fiercely throughout her life, was her interior life. She wasn't, I don't want to say closed off, but she was very guarded about that, because it was between her and God. That's why she even wanted to go to the Carmel in Coimbra in the first place, mm-hmm. was so that she would be away from all the curiosity seekers and just be with God. Well, with her passing into eternity, she left behind these documents and all these people who knew her in the Carmel, and that they can tell that story. So we're first of all introduced to the beautiful soul of Sister Lucia, and we learn things about her that we might not have had a deep appreciation of prior to the publication of this book. Now, the second part of that is, of course, the documents themselves that were unknown to the public. Like the account that we now possess of the January 3rd, 1944 apparition. But first and foremost, we have to understand it in the context of the beautiful soul of Sister Lucia and how she was guarded in her interior life. But now that we are learning more about her, we can understand and contextualize Fatima a lot better.
And there is a part, there is an unpublished part of the secret, that being her understanding of it.
According to what the biography indicates, yes, that there was some understanding. The Portuguese word is significado, that had been communicated. But Our Lady gave a positive command that Sister Lucia could not communicate that. Which, interestingly, brings up a good point, because when you read the booklet, The Message of Fatima, from the year 2000, that published the text. Are we still having trouble? You froze here on this end.
Nope. Well, the video froze, but the audio's fine.
Oh, okay. In that booklet, we see Cardinal Ratzinger making the comment that Sister Lucia said that she wasn't given the interpretation. Well, we now know that that's not the case. There was some interpretation or some meaning, significado. But Sister had been commanded by Our Lady not to reveal it. And Sister was very wise. She knew how to be truthful yet evasive in her answers. And I think that we need to factor that more in our understanding of things as to why certain curial officials like Cardinal Bertone made certain claims about her, like why she allegedly said it wasn't her, but it wasn't Our Lady, but it was her that made that distinction over, writing the date in 1960 on the envelopes. I think when we look at it from that other perspective, I think we begin to see that chosen souls are often subtle in their speech.
Mm.
And we looked at from that perspective, we begin to receive more answers.
So, Kevin, from what you're saying, you get the impression of a woman who is not an attention seeker, and her kind of reserve is also part of the allure of Fatima. It created a greater allure for Fatima.
Yes. Chosen souls are often subtle in their speech, and Sister Lucia definitely fits that bill. And she was not an attention seeker. That's the reason why she wanted to become a Carmelite, was precisely to get away from the curiosity seekers and to devote herself to a life hidden with God so she may serve him. And that's another component of the book that the Carmelites had written that we get introduced to more, and that I am absolutely convinced the more that we understand Sister from that perspective, we begin to get a whole other angle to Fatima that we can learn from and appreciate.
On the third part of The Secret of Fatima is the book. Kevin Simmons is the author. We have discussed a great deal of the history, and I thank you so much for helping us through it, because it involves so many twists and turns, many of them just magnificent, unlooked. I mean, just to me, the idea of the Communist Revolution happening a month after the end of the original apparitions, the Pope being shot, the Pope, the great, in many ways, the great anti-communist Pope, shot on one of the celebrations of the anniversary of the apparitions. All these things are extraordinary, but also extraordinary in all the twists and turns of various conspiracy theories and also sometimes sensationalist, even lurid interpretations of what's going on here. But what I really like about the book, I just wanted to share this with you, is that as you go through the chapters, it's for someone like me, for example, who has a kind of a peripheral understanding of many of the controversies, you go chapter by chapter laying out individual controversies related to the third part of The Secret of Fatima. And then you address them with a kind of historian's dispassion to let us know what caused this particular area of upset and then what the state of this is now. Look, for example, the mysterious date of 1960 or Sister Lucia and the, quote, terrifying secret. The silencing of Sister Lucia and those kinds of things as we go through. I just want to get to, I'm actually going to skip most of them and let the reader, and I highly recommend the book to you. It's striking in its clarity. And I think that's one of the things that has been missing from so much conversation about Fatima. But and so you can work your way through the various chapters. I suppose if there's a particular thing that bothered you, like, oh, what did Cardinal Ottaviani say in 1967? And well, you can read a chapter on that, you know, that kind of thing. But I want to get, because he's still with us, Pope Benedict XVI and Fatima, the 11th chapter that you get to. Among the controversies are, well, the possibility that the Pope is hiding something. That certainly has been brought up again. But also the Pope saying some things that seem somewhat contradictory about Fatima. Will you tell us a little bit about Pope Benedict and his role in all of this?
He was the prefect of the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith in the year 2000, and as such, it fell to him to write the theological commentary that accompanied the publication of the third part of the Secret of Fatima. And one of the things that he had said or otherwise indicated in his commentary was that the events of the that are predicted in the third part of the Secret, that they came to pass were fulfilled in the 20th century. Fast forward about 10 years, now he's Pope Benedict XVI. He's traveling to Portugal on an apostolic voyage, and he makes a statement to the effect that that we can learn new things about Fatima in the third part of the Secret specifically. And then later on, a few days later, while in Fatima, the Pope says that we would be mistaken to think that that Fatima's prophetic mission is over or complete. Well, a lot of people sat there and said, wait a minute. 10 years ago, around this time, you said that everything was fulfilled in the 20th century. You're backtracking. How dare you? I said, no. You completely, completely misread him. First of all, he made a couple of statements in between 2000 and 2010, wherein he clarified some of that, including to EWTN's Raymond Arroyo around 2004, shortly before his election to the papacy in 2005. That's quoted there in that, I think, chapter 11 of my book. He also wrote a letter to a bishop in which he responded to two questions, one of which pertained to this very question of, you know, can we still get some sort of insight into this later on? So it's very unfortunate, you know, that happened with poor Pope Benedict. But no, he wasn't walking back. He wasn't backtracking on his earlier assertion. What he was trying to say was, in every age in history of the Church, there's going to be persecutions. It doesn't matter if it's today, tomorrow, 100 years from now. It's gone on for 2,000 years, and if we're here for another 2,000 years, it's going to happen again. But people can look back to the third part of the Secret and read that and say, okay, God is still with us. Here's how he has protected us and worked with us in the past, and we can gain some inspiration from that. He wasn't saying that in the future there is still a Pope to be shot and other people to be killed, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Or to be some kind of a big nuclear war, and, you know, we're all going to be reduced to bows and arrows, you know, like bows and arrows are actually in the third part of the Secret. He wasn't indicating that. And then later on, he published that book, Light of the World, through the German journalist Peter Sewald. And Sewald asked him directly, point blank, what did you mean? And the Holy Father clarified.
Yeah.
So we have three statements that help us to understand this better. I mean, I don't know what more you want. You know, third time's a charm.
Right.
I don't mean you in particular.
No,
I mean,
I know what you mean.
In general.
No, I know, Kevin. I didn't take offense, but it strikes me that what happens in an apparition is so mysterious to us. It involves the divine plan. It involves the personality of the seer. It involves how the authorities respond to that seer, and that this takes a great deal of subtlety. And that one of the things that this need for subtlety can do is if you kind of refuse to be pliable and to be docile in your reception of these things, then you can easily end up constantly finding things that you'll say, this is a contradiction to that, and this doesn't fit with this, and there's something else is going on here, because it's not simply an apparition is not an essay. It doesn't come to us all with a simple kind of didactic clarity. It has a different quality. Am I right in saying that?
Yes. I like to think of it this way. Fatima was, as has been said, an explosion of the supernatural into the world. And we here in the 21st century are still picking up the pieces. And we're going to be doing so for quite a while, because it's just that profound. And you're right. We can't read it as this clear-cut essay. Everything's all nice, neat, and packaged. That's actually what's gotten us into a lot of trouble, is people want everything just force-fed. And it's like, no, God, that's not the way God works.
Right.
You know, he speaks to us through images. And private revelation in particular, it's given to individuals. It's not given to people, you know, publicly as in the sense of private divine revelation. And so the interpretation, for instance, of the third part of the secret was given to Sister Lucia as well as Jacinta and Francisco. Well, the younger two visionaries died by the end of February 1920. Sister Lucia lived all of her life knowing what she knew, and she never told another living soul about it. But the rest of us, we are, in the words of Ratzinger, you know, we go through time and we see the events unfold. Sister Lucia had that supernatural perception and insight into the events of the 20th century. The rest of us are playing catch up, in a sense. So it's, you know, we have to approach this, as I said recently in another interview, we have to approach this with humility. And I want to clarify that humility has to be both from the laity towards the church, towards this, as well as prelates of the church, you know, the magisterium and the laity, the faithful in general. Everybody has to approach it with that humility. It's not just, certain people. It's all of us, because this truly is a divine event, explosion or eruption in the world. We have to treat it as such, which means be careful as well, and have great humility, because if we think we know it, we're going to be confounded.
It exceeds us. Yeah.
On
the third part of The Secret of Fatima is the book. You don't need my recommendation. There are all kinds of wonderful recommendations given on the cover and inside of the book, but I'll add it nonetheless, because this topic that needs clarity, needs precision, and needs charity and understanding. And Kevin, you have provided all of that. Kevin J. Simmons is the author. En Route Publishing is the publisher on the third part of The Secret of Fatima. Thanks, Kevin, so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Extremely, extremely helpful interview. Thank you to all of our listeners as well for joining us here on Catholic Answers Focus. Don't forget to join Radio Club. Go to catholic.com/radioclub and join. We'll send you these to you every time we do them. And we'll see you next time on Catholic Answers Focus.